The one thing it did, though, is it made me realize that I play a very small part in a huge machine that's life-changing and providing things that nobody else is providing, and it's changing lives and it's bringing communities back together. And I want to do that. Like, I want to be part of that in the real world.
Hello, hello, and welcome to all of you beautiful souls tuning in today to the Heart of the Soul podcast. I'm your host, Amana, and I'm so happy that you're here. This is a space where we remember what it means to be wild women walking upon this earth, navigating the ebbs and flows of the seasons which we are in, honoring each other's differences and connecting about that which unites us. This podcast is an opportunity for us to practice using our voices and the ancient ritual of storytelling, sharing our stories and honoring how they shift and change across time. My hope is that you may feel more connected and less alone as you soak in these stories. Today is Thursday, October 27th, 2022. I'm currently here in Liberty Lake, Washington. I have been truly enjoying this poetic shift of the seasons into autumn, heeding the call to slow down and enjoy the beauty within the death. I have Emma with me here today in person.
I know, it's great.
Yes, such a treat to be in person.
Yeah, I agree.
I met Emma at a local BNI group I was visiting, and through that encounter, we decided to get together and chat again, and that was just so rich and full of life that we decided to gather today and for this podcast episode.
Yeah.
So Emma, if you would like to take a moment and tell people a bit about yourself and what brought you here to this conversation today.
Well, you go all the way back to my childhood. No, I won't do that. No, so I don't even remember if we talked about this when we had coffee that other time, but I was born in Rhode Island. My dad was military. And so I love the fall because the fall in Rhode Island on the East Coast is it's pretty different than here. I wouldn't say it's more beautiful. There's just more deciduous trees. And so it's a lot more leaves and things. But we moved here when I was 13, and my parents got worried that my grandparents were getting older and they might need help. And so we moved back here. I went to Running Start, which, do you know Running Start?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah, and so were your grandparents here? Is that why
you moved
here?
So they moved here. My dad was from here. And so they moved back home, and my grandparents have been fine. This is the first year.
They're still
fine. This is the first year they started to have medical issues that they needed us 15 years later, or whatever, more than 15 years. So I graduated from Deer Park, but I did Running Start at the same time. And I think that growing up, I kind of was raised with I would say a poverty mindset, that I just wanted to make sure that I would always have a job, and it didn't really matter it never occurred to me to be fulfilled in that job or be passionate about nothing. Just have a job that pays the bills. Don't be destitute was kind of like, I feel like how I approached my career. And so I actually did the culinary arts program at Running Start. And I thought, no matter where I live, what part of the world I'm in, there's always restaurants. There's always people that need to eat. I'll always be able to have a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that and graduated at, I guess 18. I think I was maybe early 19. Maybe I had just turned 19, something like that. And I felt like I didn't know what my next step was. I think a lot of kids feel like this when they're done with schooling. Whatever grade they're done with is what's next. Like, for so much of your childhood, the goal is just get done with school and graduate.
Yes.
So I worked at a few restaurants, but ended up through a series of events going on a long-term mission in Africa. And I worked with a medical organization there that it's called Mercy Ships. I don't know. You were medical, so I don't know if you ever heard of Mercy Ships.
I've heard of lots of different ones, but not
as much. So they have the largest civilian hospital ship in the world.
Okay.
And they were very well known for doing fistula surgeries, which was really cool. And like cleft palate, cataracts, burn victims, big like facial tumor things, really quite a impactful organization, but I cooked for them. So I cooked for all the doctors and the nurses and the surgeons, and it was like 800 people per meal. Wow. So I mean, like huge, huge ship, huge cafeteria style. I mean, not luxurious and food.
You'd never done anything quite like that before.
No, that was very different. I think that maybe culinary school gave me the confidence to be able to do that, mm-hmm. but definitely not like the practical.
Yeah.
How many pounds of carrots? Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. And it was an awesome experience. I mean, it was very life-changing because I had been pretty sheltered growing up, and it was my first time out of the country where it was just me. I mean, I didn't have any friends that went with me. I didn't have my family that went with me. I had to rely on myself. And I think that I would say I felt like I became an adult. I had to trust, even though I was like 21, something like that, I had to trust myself. Yeah. I had to like rely on myself. And
not many people travel that far away as like, you know, full adults, let alone that young. 20.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So I came back from Africa and I kind of went, I feel like being in Africa awakened the desire to do something that was fulfilling, mm-hmm. even though my day-to-day job was pretty boring. Like cooking for 800 people a meal is not sexy cooking. It's not what you see on the Food Network, you know?
Yeah.
So the one thing it did though, is it made me realize that I play a very small part in a huge machine that's life-changing and providing things that nobody else is providing, and it's changing lives and it's bringing communities back together. And I want to do that. Like, I want to be part of that in the real world. So when I came back, I kind of went on a new career hunt, and through a series of events that are actually relatively unimportant, I ended up in financial services, and I started working with a company that essentially allowed me to be impactful in financial services. And so some of what that looks like is like, I don't have quotas I have to meet. So I don't have to sell something where I don't think it's appropriate. And mm-hmm. I can work with middle income families who maybe I make no money off of, but I'm the only advisor that will talk to them because they have so much debt and not enough assets or whatever. So I felt very impactful in that. And I don't want to focus too much on my career, but that kind of took a life of its own. And now my husband and I own our own office. Through that time though, and this is really where I feel like it brought us here today, is we decided that we were going to start trying to have a family, and it didn't go very well. So I feel like I don't know if it's because of my upbringing or I'm not sure why, but I spent 4.5 years not doing any fertility testing, not figuring out why we weren't getting pregnant. I just kept thinking, oh, we'll tweak this one thing and it will work next month. Oh, we'll do this thing and it will, I need to be on this diet. Like you read a book or whatever, and it says, do these things. So I would do those things. Mm-hmm. And partially because we were self-employed, we didn't have great medical insurance. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to go spend a bunch of money to have the doctor just say, which I was positive he was going to say, oh, you're doing it wrong. Which, hindsight's 2020. It's like, what? No, you're not doing it wrong. No, 4.5 years, late 20s. Like, you should be getting pregnant regularly if you're trying. So I realized, okay, after 4.5 years, mm-hmm. this isn't going well. And we might need to see a doctor. So we went and did.
And were you the one that like brought that up in the relationship, or what was that like?
So great question. My husband to this day would be okay if I said, I don't want to have kids.
Excuse me.
Oh, go ahead.
It just hit you. Yeah, I'm trying to hold it back because we're here recording, but you know.
I hate that feeling. Mm-hmm. Just let it out.
So he would be fine
if
we never had children.
Yeah, he'd be totally fine if we never had kids, which was its own kind of traumatic thing, is that every month my cycle would start and I would feel like, oh gosh, he's going to be happy about it. He's going to be okay with it. Uh-huh. Where I'm the person that's like devastated every month.
Yeah.
So I kind of said like, we have to go get testing. I mean, I remember a conversation where we had where I'm sure lots of couples have conversations like this, but I just said, I know I'm going to be bitter and resentful someday. Like, I know. Because this is what I've wanted since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And so I just know that I'm not going to be able to let it go. It might look like I'm letting it go, but I can just feel that I just can't.
Yes.
Right now, at least until we've tried like all the things, you know, if all the science says we can't have kids, well then, okay, we tried, but I have to know that we tried everything. So,
and did you know when you got together and got married that he was the man that was okay not having kids?
No, he wanted kids at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that brought up some issues in our marriage where I felt a little bit betrayed. I felt like he had said he wanted kids and we'd put a timeline on it. So we'll have been married 10 years in June. Okay. So we had said like 2 to 4 years we'll wait. So we waited like 5.5 years or something. No, that's not right. We'd waited, I think, about 3 years.
And before you were open to conception?
Yeah. Before we even tried. Now, looking back, I would say we never didn't try. And that should also be a sign that something is maybe wrong. It's like,
and are you a woman who like knew your cycle, you knew your fertile window, things like that? Because so many people also think I could get pregnant at any time.
Anytime.
And
no,
yet there's like such a small,
I would say I knew my cycle. I have a very, very regular cycle. Mm-hmm. I knew approximately a fertile window around ovulation.
Mm-hmm.
I have evolved so much now that I can literally tell you the second I'm ovulating, like, that's what that is. So I didn't know that. I didn't have it that nailed down at that point, but I knew something.
But you didn't know. Yeah.
Was wrong. I mean, well, I didn't know something was wrong. I just couldn't imagine that we were doing it wrong. Like,
right. Like, and you weren't, right?
Right. Like, no.
No.
No. We're not doing it wrong. So we went to the doctor and had all of the tests run, like the basic stuff on women. And then the more advanced stuff on women, like a hysterosalpingogram and a few other things. And he had his analysis. And through this time, I can't remember if I told you this before, but Valley OBGYN and SRM changed medical record systems. And so we got lost in that shuffle. And so we went and did a bunch of tests and then didn't hear back for months about what the results were. And it was kind of traumatic because we already felt emotionally vulnerable and had put money out, hoped some doctors would give us some answers, and just never heard anything. And so I started reaching out to friends who were nurses and who had gone through infertility and asking like, how do we get answers? And I call in and they don't tell me anything. And then when they do tell me something, it doesn't make any sense. And like, how do we make sure that we're actually getting the information we need to make appropriate medical decisions? And so I was very thankful for the community that I started to recognize at that point of people who've been through infertility or miscarriage, needed more help with family planning than they wanted to have. So we finally got the answers of everything is fine and you guys look like a textbook. Like if you open a textbook, this is what everything looks like. All the numbers are great and nothing is wrong. And I don't know how you feel about this. Well, I remember asking the doctor, are there any other tests that we can do? Like other than, you know, your standard panel of tests. Are there any other tests or any books you can tell us to read or anything? Like, what's our next step?
Clues, like,
yeah.
And they basically said, well, your next step is artificial technologies like an IUI, intrauterine insemination, or IVF. Or you could go adoption route or surrogacy or something else. And we decided to do an IUI, a round of an IUI, which I think it probably was about $3,000 altogether, which it was a lot, but IVF is right
more.
Yeah. It's insane. So it's like, okay, we'll do a round of IUI. And nobody really educated us on the stats of that and like the outcome numbers.
And it's really not that different.
It's than really
what you've been doing.
No,
it's an IUI. It's nothing literally different. Then inserting the sperm into the same place that it's being.
So for unexplained infertility, where your sperm are moving good, they can get to where they need to go. So I then, after that failed, I went into a very pissed off state at Western Medicine where I felt very taken advantage of. I felt like they had not given me all the education. I felt like they had not even prepared my body very well. They hadn't really helped us with like some mental health stuff that you probably should do before, like just to be prepared for like, this is what it's going to be like, and take the day off work and like, you know, things like that, that were basic level. And I felt like if I did that in my profession, I would be sued and I would potentially, depending on how egregious it was, be thrown in jail. And they just got away with it. So I was really, really mad for a while. And so I started reading a lot of Eastern medicine books and talking to Eastern practitioners and acupuncturists, and felt a lot more validated and a lot more like there was a whole body approach to everything. And I read a phenomenal book. I recommend it to anybody. Now, any woman, I think they should read this book. It's called Making Babies. And I don't care if you're trying to get pregnant or not. It's like this thick, and probably half of it is just about how hormones work. And it's written by two doctors. One is an Eastern medicine practitioner and one is a Western medicine. And they have a practice together and they do all of the really hard fertility cases over on the East Coast. And so they wrote this book and I just felt so educated. And so like, I had no idea that there were all these other like post-coital tests that you could do. Nobody ever told me about that. Nobody ever told me about like, there's a cervical mucus test that you can do that just like tests, is your cervical mucus too acidic?
Yeah. Is it hospitable?
Is it hospitable? Nobody told us any of this stuff. Nobody told us that there could be like infections that you don't even know you have in your body. You have no
symptoms,
but they could create an inhospitable environment, or they could give you issues with your sperm and planting in an egg and like all these things that I was like, oh my gosh, no, I didn't know. And they were the first ones also to talk about how your period could be too light. Like most of the people I had talked to, they only cared about if it was too heavy and not too light.
Interesting.
And so one of the things they recommend in that book is to use a menstrual cup. I don't know if people really care about this, but use a menstrual cup because it like measures how much liquid. And I realized that I probably have like maybe 2 tablespoons of blood and like cervical mucus that in an entire cycle.
Yeah. I'm the woman who like overflows the cup.
And I always thought growing up, oh, I'm so lucky I have such a light period, when in reality it probably is an issue with conceiving that it's so light. So I felt like I started to get answers as far as I started to feel empowered. Maybe that's a better way to say it. I started to feel
knowledge.
That like I could take control a little bit more, which is a whole other thing about how I'm a control freak and fertility is the first thing in my life I've realized I have zero control over. Like it's
confronting.
You can do everything right and still you do not get to dictate the outcome. Like even if you got pregnant.
Same with pregnancy. Like even if you do everything right your whole pregnancy, your baby can die before they're born.
Yep.
Or right after.
Yeah. It's crazy. That so like that has been my radical journey, is yeah. like realizing that I'm a control freak and I have no control, and the universe gave me like the one thing that I really can't control, and like learning
and
how to
have
be
that heart desire for it
too, yeah
to like that soul heart, like yeah. your full being yeah. wants to yeah. experience this expression yeah. of
family
and family
yeah.
and
yeah wow. So it's been, I would say, just to wrap up all of this stuff, Amana, because all you asked me was what prompted the conversation today. Where we are now is we really didn't get very many answers from Western medicine doctors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like unexplained infertility is not a real thing. It's just that there are not doctors that want to explore and figure out what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not enough evolved tests to figure it out. There's not enough money going into research for that. There's a whole set of issues with that. When we went over to Eastern medicine, I felt like I got a lot more education. I felt a lot more empowered. We had the same result with everything though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I said, I kind of need a break from all of this, because at that point we were 6 years in and thousands and thousands of dollars.
So much time and energy.
Yeah. And somebody said one time that I was listening to, she said that your resources are your most precious commodity, and resources are money, but they're also emotional energy and they're also time.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I had tapped out of all of those. Like, I just felt completely drained. I had no more emotional energy to give. I had no more, I don't want to say I had no more time I wanted to give, but I didn't want to be the person that spends their entire life
mm-hmm.
unable to let go and let the universe do its thing. I didn't want to look back at my life and go, oh, we never took a vacation because that was going to be right around ovulation. And right. oh, we never did that because we spent all of our money on fertility treatments. And I know people that have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was starting to get really angry about the whole process, because I'm really athletic. I do a lot of endurance races, and a lot of those you want to like plan 6-9 months, a year in advance mm-hmm. and do training for it.
Yes.
And I would look at a race and go, oh my gosh, that looks so fun. I want to do that. And then I would go, but what if we're pregnant? I don't want to have to have done all the training and then not be able to do it. Mm-hmm. I just won't sign up. And so that was a few years of that, where I looked yes. back and I saw, oh my gosh, all my friends did all these things.
Yes.
And I didn't. And I'm in the exact same result as before. So I started to get like really bitter, which I think is a sign that you need to take a break.
Yeah.
And take a step back and let your heart mend a little bit.
And it sounds like you were like reckoning with the like what yeah. was and the possibilities that.
Yeah. I felt like I went into grief, and I remember reading in the Making Babies book where they start talking about the mental health side of infertility
mm-hmm.
and nobody had ever talked about it. Mm-hmm. And I started to realize that I think that this is trauma. Like
mm-hmm.
it's different trauma than what other people have gone through, but I was having all these triggers where like I would go out to a restaurant and see a family, and I would just like burst into tears, or I'd get really snippy or really angry.
Mm-hmm.
I was sleeping like 13 to 15 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure that I was depressed during that. Nobody once ever talked about the mental health
mm-hmm.
side of it at all. And so I was talking to a friend who has some trauma she's been through, and she said, I think that I have some of those same triggers about different things. But she said, I think that that's a trauma response. And I was like, you're right. Like, I am acting the way that someone, I'm getting triggered, like actually triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And I was finding myself not wanting to go out to events, really secluding myself. I don't want to talk about it, because I could not handle, what if I'm triggered? And I still have a business to run. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm still the breadwinner in our family. So like, I have to be okay enough
tomorrow to be able to do this, you know? Yes. So I took a break. I took a while off where we said, like, we're not going to try. We're not going to not try, but we're not going to worry about that as a filter. Mm-hmm. Like, fertility was not going to be a reason why we did or didn't do something.
Yeah. It was going to be the lens.
It wasn't going to be the lens. Whole. Yep. It wasn't going to be, oh, we can't go on vacation because, oh, people that dealt with infertility, you do everything you possibly can. So like fertility was dictating the clothes I wore because of chemicals that might be in things or like squeezing certain parts of your body or not. I mean, like it dictated my sleep mm-hmm. schedule. It dictated what I ate. I wasn't running anymore because the doctor said that I shouldn't let my heart rate get over a certain amount.
Whoa.
I mean, it was like, I was on no caffeine, no dairy, no gluten. I was doing vegan for a while. I mean, I was doing like everything and I felt like all of the joy had been sucked out of my life. And I was like, I just don't want fertility to be what dictates what I eat. Mm-hmm. Like if I want to eat a cookie, I want to be able to eat a cookie, yes, you know, yeah. and be okay with that.
Yeah.
So we just took that away and it was such a break. It was such a break, but I still couldn't like, you don't really turn off your desires.
No.
Like when it's your true heart desire, like it's still there. And so at that point, I just felt like, oh my gosh, my biological clock is ticking, ticking, ticking. We're wasting all this time. We should be doing all these things. And then so that pretty much was up till like the beginning of the summer this year, mm-hmm. where we kind of were like trying, but not trying, trying to not think about it, but it's still on the back of your mind, trying to not let it run my life.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning of the summer, I just went, let's make a decision about what we're going to do in the fall, whether we're going to do IVF or we're going to adopt. Let's decide in the fall and let's just take the summer to do whatever we want. And so something about knowing when we were going to make a decision about what mm-hmm. we're going to do. I just spent the summer doing everything that I feel like I've been wanting to do all the last 7 years, like yeah, whatever like races I, yes, yeah, that's how I felt. And so then at the end of the summer, so this has just happened recently,
mm-hmm.
We decided we're going to do a round of IVF. We did a consult with a clinic in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
$35,000. And I'm sure, you know, like with IVF, it doesn't typically work the first time. Mm-hmm. So you kind of mentally have to go into it going, it might take 2 or 3 rounds.
Yeah.
That's like $100,000 if you do 3 rounds.
And it includes all the like pre stuff of like having your taking the hormones to harvest the eggs to then like, whoa.
So I was like, I can't fathom that. And mm-hmm. I was complaining to my sister-in-law who also had unexplained infertility and they're down in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I don't think that's what our clinic charges. And she pulled up, they actually had a price sheet on their mm-hmm. website, which almost no clinic does.
Mm-hmm.
And of the same exact round is $12,000.
Utah. I know people that go to Mexico for the same.
I've actually thought about that of going to.
I know someone who went, outside. I can tell you.
Yeah, we should talk about that because I'm not opposed to that. I actually was looking into going to Okinawa
uh-huh.
because I have 2 friends that have had IVF babies through the fertility clinic in Okinawa.
Yeah.
In Japan. And
yes, because it's insane. Like how the price difference?
Yeah. Same level of doctors too.
Yes.
So
yes,
like the ones in Seattle, reproductive uh-huh. endocrinologist and uh-huh. infertility specialists also didn't know that that was a different license than OBGYN. I mean, I didn't know so much. And in Utah, they're all REIs as well. And it's like, how can you have the same license mm-hmm. and charge double?
It doesn't make sense.
Does not make sense to me at all. So yeah. So we have another,
that's what you're moving towards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So November 15th, I'll have a consult with the clinic in Utah.
Okay.
and we'll get better idea of prices and be able to like decide on a date. And I could tell just from the pre-consult questionnaire that they're a lot more whole body. They asked how much acupuncture you'd done, mm-hmm. if you'd done a post-coital test, if you've done a cervical mucus mm-hmm. test, if you've done all these things. And I was like, they're asking me
where
things.
Were these people?
Yeah. So I felt a lot more. I feel hopeful. Mm-hmm. I also feel like I need to do some mindset work because my gut instinct is that it's just not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's like protective in some ways?
I think it's somewhat protective. I think it's, yeah, not getting my hopes up to have them dashed. I think that there's a fear base to it too. Mm-hmm. And I also think that when humans go through grief, we do a lot to protect ourselves. And I think I've been doing a lot to protect myself over the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. And so I have to take some of those, I have to learn, because I don't know how to do it, but I have to learn how to take some of those walls down to be able to know that like, I'm going to be okay no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No matter what happens, the goal is to go, oh, we tried. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, we do the next thing, which would probably be adoption. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I know that I need to do some mindset and heart work before we go into the actual cycle, because mm-hmm. I want to give it its best chance. And I'm a firm believer in energy, and I want to be very open to it working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause it does work.
Yes.
For a lot of people.
Yeah. So. Yeah. What do you feel like that will look like for you? Like
doing work on it, or what would it?
Yeah. Or what does, when you say you want to do some like mindset and.
I think that it looks like making space in my life and my schedule to be able to be quiet and let myself process through how I would feel if it did work mm-hmm. and how I would feel if it didn't work, and letting myself realize that I'm okay and I'm safe no matter what the outcome is. Mm-hmm. But I think that I'm really good at holding a lot of emotions at bay.
Mm-hmm. So like having space to express
them. Yeah. Yeah.
Through tears or movement exactly. or writing or whatever it is yeah. for you, that sounds like an important piece.
Yeah. And writing is a really big outlet for me. We went through a time, and I think I was saying, I'm pretty sure I was depressed. Mm-hmm. We went through a time where I went, I need help. And I tried to get into a therapist, couldn't get in. And mm-hmm. it was during the middle of COVID, mm-hmm. during the middle of the pandemic. So it was really hard. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started my blog, because writing is really therapeutic to kind of work through feelings and emotions. And, you know, why did that come up? Why did I get triggered by that? Why did that affect me? Why did that not affect me mm-hmm. consciously? Like, was I affected subconsciously? And that's going to manifest in something else that I need to mm-hmm. look out for. And so, I found great like emotional relief in being able to write. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of it is probably going to be writing out some stuff too, about how am I going to feel if this works and how am I going to feel if it doesn't work? And even saying that, I feel a little bit like there's no way for it to not work, because the whole point is to check something off a list and say, we tried everything we could to have a biological child. Like, I just don't want to be in my 50s, 60s and look back mm-hmm. and go, gosh, we never even tried that.
Yeah.
And so it will work, because it either is we get pregnant and we have a baby, or we check something off the list and we can feel free to move on yes. to the next thing.
Yes.
Which right now I don't feel free to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. Huh. Some of it is just talking to people.
Yeah.
Cause you just realize stuff from different people, right? Mm-hmm. That you don't think about before.
Absolutely. Well, I know we're getting close to our time of closing, and I know you have something in a few minutes, but I would love for you to tell a little bit more about your blog to people so that those that might want to like follow along on this journey with you or just, gain access to your writings about it.
Yeah.
Tell me more about the name of your
blog. So the name is gratefulandgrieving.com, and I put a lot of thought into what would I want to name a blog that is my journey with fertility, but it doesn't, but I don't want it to be limited to just me. And so I don't remember how Grateful and Grieving came about other than I think I was talking about it a lot, that I wanted it to be something that conveyed that you can hold two emotions in your head and in your heart at the same time. You can be grateful for everything that you have, and you can grieve what you had pictured you would have, and how that applies to way more than fertility.
Yes.
The more that I've been on this journey of fertility, but specifically with the blog, the more stories I've heard from people, and I went, I feel those exact same emotions about grief. I feel the exact same way. And I just have realized that grief is universally felt and it is the same feelings. Mm-hmm. It manifests in different ways. Mm-hmm. It looks different ways based on your life experience. But I have felt like I've talked to women whose husbands have committed suicide, and what they tell me, I go, oh my gosh, I feel the same way. Or I'll say something and they'll go, that's exactly how I feel. And it's two completely different stories. Mm-hmm. And it's still the same. It's like grief connects your soul.
Same like palpable felt senses.
Yeah. Grief. So I landed on Grateful and Grieving because I didn't want to focus only on grief. I wanted it also to be a place where like, it's okay to be happy. It's okay to be grateful for what you have. You don't need to always feel like you should be sad or you should be upset. It's okay to say like, I'm thankful for this friendship. It sucks. This is the topic we're talking about, but it's awesome that we got to meet each other through this.
Yes.
And I feel like that's life in general. You don't have light without darkness. You don't have darkness without life or light. You have yin and yang. Life and death are all together. And that to me is what this blog is about. And figuring out ways to celebrate and figuring out ways to make space for grief. Mm. And so at this point, it's basically my ramblings of fertility and processing all of those emotions of how do you be grateful and how do you grieve and what does that look like every day? And it also looks a lot at how do you be a supporter of someone who's going through this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important. Like we're in a culture that doesn't really know how to grieve or hasn't practiced supporting one another through it.
And I know that it's a lot easier to give advice than take advice. And I had a situation recently where a very close friend lost a very dear family member. And I found myself wanting to do all the things that I tell people not to do because I wanted her to feel better.
Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable.
Because you have to meet someone in that place of being uncomfortable and go, I'll just sit here with you and like cry. Don't cry, curse and scream. Let's go on a walk together. I don't care, but I'm not going to try to make you feel better. And I felt like I felt like that was the first time that I had to like take my own advice and realize it's really hard. And so the blog explores that too, of how do you let someone grieve? How do you meet them in that place? And it's not just about fertility. It's about grief in general. Yes. So I have big hopes for this blog. It's not a moneymaker. I don't ever want it to be a money. I don't want that to ever be something that I have to like, do. It's my passion project. So I, someday want to do things like I want to do a fertility run where it's like for people to come together and talk about things. Yes. I want to support other people. So I have lots of things that like I hope to get to with it. But right now it's just a community of people being grateful and grieving together and figuring it out. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to share or other places that people can find you or follow you? Or
so I do have an Instagram handle. It's Grateful and Grieving is my Instagram handle.
Okay.
I feel like it is not well cultivated to my messaging. Like I'm not social media perfect, you know, like I don't post all the things. Yeah. Unless you hire someone to like do it for you. So it's about my life and I share resources and books I've read and posts from doctors or reels that I thought were really powerful, but it's not an Instagram that's all about infertility, I would say. So those are the two best places, our Instagram and my blog.
Beautiful.
Both Grateful and Grieving.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Amana, for letting me ramble on at you.
It's so good. So good. I know people will want to hear what you're sharing about. It's really important and it's not spoken about enough. So
I love what you said in your intro about the goal is to make a place to process the different changing seasons of life. And I hope that this gives some, I don't know, acceptance to people that like they're not alone if they've gone through anything. It's not something we talk about.
No.
We should.
Yes. Well, we are. We are being the change that we seek in the world.
Yes, exactly.
That's what this podcast is about.
I came up to you and said, you probably don't want to know this about me, but, and I shouldn't even come into it with that mindset. Of course you want to know.
Yeah. This is my life's work too, to connect with people and talk about these things that other people are afraid or don't want to or can't talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you as well. Oh, and thank you all who have tuned in today. If you love the podcast, I would be grateful if you choose to subscribe, rate, or review, or share the show. If you feel aligned with me and feel called to access your inner wild woman, I provide one-on-one mentorship to women all over the world. To learn more, you can book your free clarity call at www.birthingnova.love. I would love to connect with you. And until next time, be brave, be bold, be love, be you.
I love it.